broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
All right, welcome everybody to today's episode of Refresh Your Wealth, all about saving taxes, building wealth, protecting it. We've got a really cool topic today. I'm really excited about it. If you're new to this show and someone may have sent you this link, or you search for a topic on international travel or international tax law, international investing, we want to welcome you. We've been doing this podcast for over 10 years as tax and legal experts. My name is Mark Kohler. I'm a CPA attorney and really kind of a Main Street small business tax lawyer. We've expanded over the years with our accounting firm, law firm, our trust company for self-directing your retirement accounts. So I've been around the block a little bit, but I'm kind of, you know, anti-Wall Street. So, and that's okay. You know, can still have a little bit of our wealth deployed in Wall Street, but we want to take control of it and do the best we can. Now I've got a special guest today. Normally my co-host is the infamous Matt Sorensen, and we have a good time together. Matt had a busy week, but this was really, isn't it funny how in life blessings kind of come in disguise and you don't see it coming and you're trying to make lemonade out of lemons and you're like, darn, that tastes good. That was a good thing that happened. So we've got a special guest with us today. This is Christy Parker. Now, Christy, I'm going to introduce you. Is that okay? I'm just going to kind of get it out there.
As long as you keep calling me a blessing, not a curse, we're good to go.
There we go. Christy joined our firm this year as a tax lawyer, international tax lawyer. Now she's, that may sound very cachet or like, whoa, this show's above my head. I don't need this stuff, but hey, we have a lot of clients that might have a little rental property back where their extended family could be in, maybe a U.S. territory like Puerto Rico or in Samoa, or they could even have some property in Australia, Mexico, down in a rental property down in Cabo. If you've thought about having property internationally, you're dealing with international tax law. So you can get into that arena much quicker than you think. So anyway, we have really been excited for Christy to help people here domestically. But when anybody brings up foreign issues, we're like, we got Christy now. So she's also helped with the estrogen issue amongst all of us male attorneys in the office.
You're welcome.
We love it. It's good for us. We tend to be cleaner around the office now. I'm just joking. We got lots of ladies here in the office, but she does add a wonderful dynamic. And Christy's been a lawyer for over 10 years, I think in her 11th year, worked in different firms around the country and internationally. She's traveled to four continents. She was recently in the South Pacific with a firm, full-time working offshore. So she just doesn't help people offshore. She has also lived offshore doing legal work for international transactions. And today's topic, okay, you've seen it in the title. So, and Christy, I'm going to let you say more here, but I just want to get the topic and our wonderful guest, Christy, out there. Our topic today is really going to be a two-part show. And this is for a big reason. Our topic, of course, is traveling internationally and investing abroad. More and more people feel like putting money offshore, buying some property offshore, hedges against the volatility of the U.S. economy and U.S. dollar. And some people think the world's coming to an end in the United States, so why not put some investments offshore, possibly? Some of you travel internationally and you're like, man, I could buy a little rental property in this cute part of the world. So it is, again, more and more common for the average citizen to even consider this. But the reason why we're calling it part one, part two, is today we're going to talk about the traveling internationally. Before you even buy the property internationally, what are some important travel tips? And part two, next week, I think, is going to be our open forum. And then we'll come back with part two of this and bring Matt Sorensen into the conversation, which I think will be fun. Matt always adds wonderful dynamic. But so this is going to be part one, traveling internationally and investing abroad. We've got some 13, 14 tips here. This is exciting. I'm going to tell you my perspective of where I'm coming from here in a moment. But Christy, welcome. There's the title. There's you. Anything you want to add? I mean, this, tell people how important this is.
This is a great topic. And if you've done any traveling internationally at all, I think you'll appreciate this. I have personal experience with several of these tips that Mark's is going to throw out there. So I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to hear what things I did wrong.
Yeah. Well, when she was kidnapped by the Taliban and she was in close quarters for about 3 years, I'm just joking. But yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. Okay. Now, but I'm going to even tell you about it. I'm just going to plant the seed here of how fun this show is going to be. Because we've had JJ Luna here on the show before talking about privacy strategies and hiding yourself when you travel or your assets and kind of that alias strategy when you invest and do business and protecting yourself privacy-wise. But these are safety strategies that go hand in hand with privacy a lot of times. And I went through a training. What kind of got this going? Several things. There's a lot of things, moving parts here. We had that family traveling to a wedding down in Mexico. It was 8, 9, whatever it was. Family members killed, children killed, cartel shooting. That happened this week. Also, I was at a training, completely separate from that Mexico tragedy. I was in a training for executives and business owners of what to look out for when you travel and what happens if you get targeted for a carjacking or a kidnapping. What do you do? And oh my gosh, for 3 hours, I got training from ex-tier one military on what you should be doing. And since I'm a huge Jason Bourne, Jack Reacher fan, this was right up my alley, man. These guys were like, you need help, buddy. But I had a good time. So that can't happen this week. So that's kind of where that's coming from. All right. So with all that said, so if your interest is piqued, that's what the rest of the show is going to be about. It's going to be pretty cool. We're going to do our regular tax and legal tip. And Christy is prepped and ready to go, man. It's a rookie show. And man, you're ready.
Dibs,
you got the legal,
tip. I was going to say, dibs on the legal tip. I'm going to throw you the tax tip.
Okay. All right. Cool. Okay. Well, let's do it.
All right.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Okay, so the legal tip for today is deeding your property into your LLC. So lots of us create our LLCs and then we don't follow through and remember that we've got to move the property into the LLC to actually get our asset protection. What does that look like? Usually it's going to be a deed transfer. Title of the property is going to move from you individually or from the seller into your LLC. You can have us help you do that. We do it in about 45 to 47 states. Very cheap. You're going to have some recording fees at the county level. And that's the best way to get your asset protection. Same idea with your trusts. We've ran an estate plan special earlier this year where we encouraged everybody to get their trust set up. And as part of funding your trust, you're also going to want to deed your primary residence into that trust. So make sure that as you get your LLC set up, rental properties, that we're deeding the property into the LLC.
Okay. And of course, everybody's freaking out. Oh, due on sale clause. Christy, you have no idea. My bank said I can't do it. Or I've got this special VA FHA loan. I can't do that.
Response. Don't worry about it. Go ahead. Deed it. One, the bank's never going to know about it. Just keep making your payments on time. And it'll be just fine. Get the property protected and go forward from there.
Okay. I like it. And folks, if some of you are like, what do you do on sale clause? You guys are so cavalier. We've got articles on this, little YouTube videos on this. We're not trying to commit bank fraud or some sort of problem like that. The bank has already sold your mortgage as long as you're making your mortgage payment. A lot of times there's a provision in your mortgages that if you're transferring the property to just a trust or entity that you own or control 100%, the bank's like, we still got our guarantees. We still have our personal guarantee from you. We're okay. It's what they're worried about is a transfer to a third party and those sorts of things. And again, as long as the mortgage is paid, 99.9% of the time you're under the radar, but you've increased your asset protection dramatically. So what's the worst case scenario? They tell you to put it back. Chill out. Banks don't want to redo your loan. They want you to just make payments. So, all right. Well, great tip. Thanks, Christy. Thanks for letting me add a little addendum to that. Was that okay? Do you approve that addendum?
I endorse that addendum. Wow.
Not only approve, endorse. Okay.
Well, all right. So have you got a tax tip for us?
Yeah, I think you're going to like it too.
All right. Bring it on.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Okay, tax tip. Here's a tip that you're not going to like. I've just got to say it, people, because here's what's happening with phone calls with a lot of our clients between October, November, December. This is the time to do tax planning before you're in. What, are you going to put your kids on payroll? Are you going to do a health reimbursement plan? Are you going to fund a 401k? Are you going to buy a new car, a truck, equipment? See, we just, there is a whole little host of things, and I probably got your mind spinning there. You're right. I need to think about this, because if you don't deal with it before December 31st, you're not going to get the write-off. I can't make some paper trail appear out of thin air in February or March next year. So we need to deal with this now. So the tip is not do some year-end planning and have a half hour to an hour consult with one of our tax advisors, your own, a self-evaluation, you know, sitting Indian style on a mountain somewhere. The point is, you got to have that year-end tax tip. But here's, I mean, that year-end tax planning session. But here's the tip. We have so many calls right now where we get on the phone and go, well, how much money you made this year? Well, I don't know. How much medical expenses have you had? I haven't added it up. And question after question. And if your books are not even remotely close to being accurate, it's a lot harder to do year-end planning. So here's my tip. Take a weekend, two or three nights, just plan it. Just already know that you're going to screw over three or four nights. Get a big bowl of popcorn, some Diet Coke, get your laptop out on the kitchen table, and sit down and try to get this figured out. If you have a little larger organization, you want to plan a meeting with your in-house accountant, your bookkeeper that comes by the office once a week, your outsourced accountant like our service that we help clients with. Schedule some time to get your books in order so that you can make an informed, educated, wise, smart, logical, how many more adjectives do I need to add, decision. So that has to happen before the year-end planning session for the most part. Now, if you're still Harry Caray and your books are freaking a disaster, I get it. That doesn't mean skip planning. Still go for it and do the best you can. But you're going to have a lot more productive experience if you'll eat the frog, clean the bathroom, do the bookkeeping, whatever you want to say it is, just get it freaking over with. That way your planning session is much more productive, whoever is with. Christine, do you want to add an addendum to mine? I will consider endorsing it before, just so you know it. Endorsement does not come automatically.
My addendum, I guess, would be not only get your books in order, but make sure that you get your corporate books in order. Know what your entities are. Make sure that you've done your annual minutes, that you've filed your annual renewals with the state. We can help you do that if you need us to. But sort of take the year end to get all of your house in order.
Okay, I like it. That's good. Good little, and it, oftentimes it comes goes hand in hand with your books. It comes along with it. So you kind of like, oh, I better do my minutes, or I need to pay my fee to the state. My LLC or corp's jacked up. Maybe I need to do my deed transfer, like you talked about. Well, let me think. Careful consideration. Yeah, I'll endorse that. I think that's a good addendum.
Woohoo!
Yeah, boom. We're in business. Okay, well, we are now going to start on this international travel part one as the precursor to investing in property or assets offshore. There's a lot of privacy strategies that go on with this. Now, let me give one quick disclaimer so that many of you know where we're headed, because we have a lot of CPAs and attorneys that also listen to our show, share it with their associates. We're not talking about hiding you from the IRS. We're not talking about going off the grid where you'd have a problem with the federal government. We're not trying to create a fraudulent transfer for a judgment or lien or something that may be outstanding against you personally. That's not our style. You better call Saul if you're going to go that route. You don't call the, what is it, the vacuum cleaning company and just they'll pick you up in a van and you're out of here. But that's not our style. We want to be smart when we travel. We want to be honest. We're not trying to plan in the fringes here, but there is so much. When I went to this training 2 days ago, that 95% of American travelers don't even think about when they go, that can make your experience so much more rewarding and safe and successful. So that's where we're headed. Christy, any kind of thoughts on that in general? Because again, you've traveled far more than I have internationally. I probably traveled around the U.S. a few times. Every 2 weeks I'm going somewhere, but internationally on my Caribbean cruise ship, it was very important to meet at the buffet at the right time. I can give tips on that, but I don't know about this international travel. Some general thoughts.
I mean, I think that you're on the right track. You know, we get calls regularly, saying, how do I hide my assets and that sort of thing. And, you know, particularly in today's environment, that's getting a lot harder to do. And that's not really what we're about. We want you to be doing aggressive tax planning, getting the best benefits that you can, but not trying to get away with anything or sort of game the system. So
now let me add that when you say hide your assets from taxation, we're not that. Now, hiding your assets from a potential lawsuit that could come down the path, we're okay there. Those are two different issues, right? Could I throw that out?
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. Yep. So we're not about trying to, you know, sort of defraud Uncle Sam, but we are about asset protection, making sure that both your domestic and your international holdings are safe, secure, and you're not at risk.
Okay. I love it. Okay. All right. So let me set the stage here with my training that could, you know, throw this out. This is not a call-in show to talk about this family down in Mexico, Mormon ties. There's rumors of human trafficking ties. There's some issues. I'm just going to say, if you start digging deeper into this, it's not maybe as random or accidental as some people may think. I don't want to get into conspiracy theories on that, but some of these tips would have helped out that family even going down into Mexico, which you'll see. But I don't want to make this discussion about that situation with that tragedy, which is terrible. I mean, just the fact these children being killed we won't even go there. If you haven't read the news clippings on it, it's really tragic, but terrifying. But keep it in the back of your mind. But that's not the focus of this show in that context. What I was scheduled for this training that I went to 2 days ago, and I want to give a reference to the company that did so. They were fantastic, just absolutely fantastic. And this is going to be a website I will reference later on as well. It's onpointtactical.com. Very straightforward. Onpointtactical.com. The trainer that was there, who was the founder, was Kevin Reeve. We were in close quarters. We were able to get almost a one-on-one session with him for 3 hours, where he teaches classes around the country. And you can go to their website and look at training courses. Now, their number one, I guess, claim to fame is helping you be careful with a possible kidnapping, a possible carjacking, a mugging, and how you need to be cautious in urban travel. Now, they also have wilderness survival courses, which are really cool. And these guys were just fascinating. Again, ex-military, ex-government, and there was people they consult with and work with that we can't even know what they do. We talked about human trafficking. We talked about a lot of things that just don't get covered by mainstream media. And I will give a disclaimer here for those that are maybe opposed to the Second Amendment. Guns are conversation in this area. What do you do? Are you going to protect yourself with guns or knives, mace, pepper spray, or whatever? And I'm not advocating everyone needs to go buy a gun, but that conversation comes up in this conversation. So just be prepared for it and don't get your hair up on the back of your neck. So I thought it was a really cool training session. And it kind of got my juices flowing. And then I called Christy. And when I called Christy to say, hey, we got to do this show, Christy, kind of what came to your mind in this travel concept before we start with I think I've got 13 tips. Now, I've got I may have 14 tips here, and it may evolve as we go. But have you been had training on this? Do you read on this? Are you aware? Do you feel like you this is obvious for you when you've traveled?
Yeah, well, the first thing that popped into my head was, is Mark wearing camo?
Touche, fair enough. It is casual Friday. I did wear kind of a green sweater. Am I blending in here on the webcam with my office?
I think you're an open target right now. but no, I have done, we didn't do any training, and I probably should have, in all honesty, because I've learned a lot of lessons sort of the hard way, if you will, in international travel. And I've actually been associated with a lot of people who've learned lessons the hard way, to the extent that I've had clients where, you know, I was working with a group of executives, and about 4 out of 5 of the executives were all mugged on this business trip that we were all participating in separate incidences, in sort of separate locations in the same city. And it was all our naivete, you know, that made us obvious targets. And I think that if we'd have had that conversation in advance, it could have saved us a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And let me again paint the picture here that makes this just, this is not in mainstream media, but you start doing statistical research on this, you find out that it is insane. For example, just kidnapped foreign nationals 3 years ago was an average of over one, or I'm going to say right now the estimates are 2 a day. Two kidnappings a day. Some of them are motivated for different purposes and reasons. Some are political, and some are for profit. Some are leverage. They want someone else released. So they could be ideological. They're trying to make a point. And then there's the human trafficking, and which makes these statistics just blow off the chart. For example, in 2016, this is 3 years ago, because a lot of these stats come after the fact, suggested a world total of 12,500 to 25,000 kidnappings a year for these different purposes. And 3,600 alone were in Colombia, and 3,000 in Mexico in the year 2000. That was just, they were able to pinpoint it that accurately. Now, Mexico, and here's another statistic on this, Mexico is the most dangerous country for Americans worldwide. And even though millions of Americans visit it annually without incident, you have to be cautious. There's a good friend of mine that's a cop in the LA police force, high up, probably 3 from the top. I won't say his name. And he's like, Mark, you do not go to Mexico. I don't care if it's a cruise ship. I don't care if it's this. And if you do go, you go where the tourists go, if you feel like you have to, and you never get off the main roads and do anything stupid like that. In 2016, more Americans were reported killed by homicide in Mexico than the combined total of Americans killed in every other country abroad. Total. Now, this wasn't military. This was just average Americans. More Americans were killed in Mexico, and this is carrying forward year after year right now, than combined around everywhere else in the world. It's that dangerous. So when this family gets shot up in a caravan of SUVs down in Mexico, again, just as a side note, you have to say, come on, didn't we know? And look at agencies, advisories for the U.S. State Department have a no-go warning for more than half of Mexico's 31 states, the remaining 15 states, and its capital, Mexico City, exercise increased caution. I don't know if that's yellow, red, blue. They have colors for these too. And so this is violent crime, murder, petty crime, muggings, kidnappings, everything. So again, if that kind of paints the picture, let's get into tip number one. Okay, tip number one, and Christy, I'm going to just throw these out and then you can, we went over these before the show, but I'll just kind of push them through and then I'd love your commentary on this. It's really a more experienced person than me and maybe many of our listeners. Number one is be in the present. And this is not a list of priorities and most importance. We're just going to list these 14. Number 13 could be the most important. So don't think these are in order of priority. But number one is be in the present. Stop internal dialogue. Do not be on your phone in public spaces, because it immediately eliminates peripheral vision. A lot of people that are taken or mugged are looking at their phone and don't even see someone 3 feet next to them. And so this awareness is absolutely critical. Now, I'm going to do a lot of movie references here. And these guys that were teaching the class said there are a lot of trade craft that's very, very accurate in movies like Jason Bourne, Jack Reacher. And they even gave us a list of movies to go watch, if we're kind of geeks that way, that are Hollywood movies that are actually very on point. But he says, notice how Jason Bourne, everywhere he goes, in that first Jason Bourne movie, and I'm going to quote to him a lot. Some of you are like, I've never seen a Jason Bourne movie. Well, you may want it. It's kind of fun. In that first movie, he's in the diner, and he's like, I don't know who I am, but I know how many cars are in the parking lot. I know this guy over here is probably packing heat. I know how many people are in the place. I know what, you know, he's just aware. And so we cannot just be deadheads when we're traveling internationally. It's not wise. Christy.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts on this one. One, on the airplane to get to where you're going. So even before you get to your location, I want you to be in the present. You'll read stories, you know, about when planes go down and people were barefoot, or, you know, and their phone and everything is gone and they've got to try and escape from wreckage, not wearing shoes. I want you to know where the exits are, who's around you, you know, have some idea of who's sitting next to you, what's going on in your environment as you get to where you're going. And then I guess my other example of being in the present was one of my earliest experiences, not even traveling internationally, but interacting with a person who was foreign and had recently come to the US. And we went out to dinner, and I did something like set my purse on the table and then went to fill my Coke glass. And this woman that I was with about lost her mind. She was like, what are you doing? Because in her country, if you had left anything unattended in any public space, even if you were just across the room, it would be gone faster than you could turn around and notice that it was gone.
Oh my gosh, so good. I love it. I've got, okay, two. Now this is on point one still. I want to throw this out. Same thing happened to me domestically, Las Vegas, Hampton Inn. This is on the South Hampton Inn location right off I-15. It's over by the In-N-Out. Many of you know that Vegas, know the one I'm talking about. I set my business bag down, turned around, filled up my little bowl of oatmeal at the breakfast bar, turned around, back to my bag, gone. My car keys were in it, my wallet, everything. I was stranded in Vegas for 2.5 days. Ultimately, the bag turned up 2 weeks later in a dumpster, and a worker at a convenience store was so kind to call, and I got a lot of the business items back, laptop gone, wallet gone. But I was able, I had to go to dealerships to get these key fobs for newer cars done. You can't just call a locksmith. My wife had to FedEx me keys to the car because the dealership couldn't even get it there as fast as a FedEx. So, but that was me not being in the present at even a Hampton Inn in Vegas, turning around for 30 seconds or less. So great point, Christy. Okay, now I'm going to move these around as our conversation. And so I'm going to move to number two, which was actually lower in my list, but it really, what you said just hit me. Number two, pack a go bag. It's called a go bag. Now, in military terms, this is very common. It's a bag that if you have to go quick in an emergency situation, you grab it and go. It could be as small as a fanny pack. Oh, and by the way, internationally, you never use the word fanny pack. That does not mean a good thing. So just whatever. But one of those in the US terms, one of these little waist bags or a backpack, and you're going to put some basic things in it. So when you said, Chrissy, I like what you said. Even before you get there, you're on the plane, you're thinking, you're traveling through the airport, or where do you put things down? Number two is pack wisely, with this go bag concept. And I think so many of us are like, the only thing we're worried about is, do I have an international charger so I can plug my phone in? We don't think about any of this. I've got a good little story on this too. But do you pack differently after some of your experiences internationally?
I do, absolutely. My very first trip to Europe, I did the standard American thing, and I packed one of the gigantic wheeled cases. I put everything in there. I had an outfit for any occasion that could possibly happen.
Sounds odd for a woman.
I think I had four, maybe five pairs of shoes. And pretty quickly I realized that hauling that around through multiple airports, through customs, in and out of cabs, on trains, it was horrible. So my first, yeah, pack light if you can, you know, wear stuff that is versatile, you know, black so that you can maybe wear it a couple days in a row. The other thing that I learned actually from one of my executives that I was traveling with is two smaller bags are much easier to travel with and keep track of than sort of one larger bag. And I think that dovetails with your idea of a go bag. Maybe one bag is sort of your comprehensive, this has everything in the kitchen sink, and then a smaller bag that you keep with you that has the absolute minimum essentials, your drugs, your cosmetics, one change of clothes, so that if you get separated from, you know, sort of your main bag, you still have your go bag with you ready to go.
Oh, I love it. And as soon as I asked, do you travel, you know, pack differently internationally? I do. Instead of kind of your normal swim trunks, I go with kind of the Speedo because I want to fit in when I'm down on the Riviera. So it's just kind of a different thing, you know, got to win in Rome.
Space saving.
Yeah, there you go. But no, other quick example here. This is a good friend of mine. I'm going to call her out because she listens to the show. Her name's Lisa Rhodes, good friend back in California. And she loves to talk about the story. She was on the Carnival ship where the engine died off the shore of California. It was about 7-8 years ago. And it just started floating out there with no control of the ballast and a lot of what cruise ships do to prevent seasickness. So this thing's going around, everybody's getting sick. Power went out in the ship for almost 48 hours. They had to tow it in. Here's what she had. She had packed in her suitcase. Her husband always teased her, paid off. She had packed a flashlight. She had packed a little first aid kit. She had packed like 5 or 6 crazy things that you would never pack on a cruise. And as soon as the power went out, she popped on her flashlight. Half the crew didn't even have flashlights. She was prepared and she loves to talk about that. And I thought that was really interesting. And it didn't take a lot of space, but for her, she's always thought, I need to plan for a potential emergency even when I'm traveling. And we think, oh, when I travel, everything will be okay. Or the government will take care of me or the hotel will take care of me. There's 3,000 of you in that hotel? Maybe not. So you got to take care of yourself. And I thought that was, if you ever want to talk to Lisa, I'll hook you up and she can school you on what to pack on a cruise ship. But she is so funny on that. And I thought, so a go bag, more advanced military folks that are listening that have experience will also refer to what's called a blowout bag. And a blowout bag is different than a first aid kit. And it talks about, it's got the items to stop bleeding. You got shot. You got, you know, significant things. And I think it's, there's other acronyms for this. But if you're in a federal contractor, you work for Blackwater, such a scenario, you might have even a more advanced bag for that sort of thing. But anyway, so traveling, packing. So I'm going to call that the pack wisely and the go bag and all that. Number two. And you know, I'm going to throw it out at you, Christy. I've got my 15. Do you have one you want to throw out there and see where it fits on my list? Because I'm ready to go. I got number three.
I would say my top three is figure out the currency and maybe do the exchange before you get there. So I've had an experience where I sort of hit the ground in a foreign country with US dollars in my pocket, and you can't pay for a cab, you can't buy a drink. you can't do anything if they don't accept your currency. So I learned that it's better, and often you can do this even in the airport as you're, you know, maybe between countries or just about to do the international flight. Go ahead and exchange your currency, and you don't have to get a lot right up front, but at least have some ready cash on hand for when you hit the country that you're going to, you have some resources.
I love it. Okay. We're going to keep moving here. And on, because we will not get through this. This is literally could be, as many of you can imagine, why On Tactical teaches that. On Point Tactical teaches a class, as you can spend all day on this stuff. And by the way, we're going to come to what to do if you're potentially in a kidnap situation. So this is it. We're going to get to that level. I'm going to go with love the currency thing. Number four, match the baseline. Now, this is really interesting. What they taught is do not look like an American when you're traveling. Match the baseline and where, and in fact, he consults with executives of Fortune 1000 companies, and he says, when you hit the ground, you don't even have clothes. You go to the nearest mall and you buy clothes that fit that country, and that's what you wear the whole time. And they're like, well, I want to wear my suit. I want to look good. I'm a professional. No, you're not. If you need to wear that in the hotel for that meeting, but when you're on the street and when you're in public transportation or even a taxi or any sort of transportation, you're wearing local clothing. Wear a hat, a beanie, you blend. Now, what's fun about this is we have Jason Bourne, and I'm going to talk about Red, another great fun movie with Bruce Willis. In Jason Bourne, Supremacy, when he's in India with Marie, right, start of the show, and he goes for a jog, and he's walking through the town, and he sees a guy, and because he's alert and he's in the present, he sees a guy that doesn't blend. And the guy had sunglasses on, a shirt. He did not fit the MO of that area. And immediately he said, he's here for me. He's following me because he knows what that would look like. And so he noticed someone not blending. Number two examples in the movie Red, and this is all tradecraft. This was really funny. These guys are like, no, this is what you're taught when you're in the military or the government or high level executives. In the movie Red, when, his last name's Moses. Oh, I forgot his last name. Bruce Willis is a retired ex-CIA agent, and he's living in a neighborhood. And he goes out to take his garbage out to the street, and he looks around, and every other house has Christmas decorations. And he looks at his, nothing. And he's like, oh my gosh, rookie move. And he turns around, he goes and buys all these Christmas decorations, so he blends in. So matching the baseline, don't wear clothing, tennis shoes, bags that make you stand out as an American.
Mark, I agree with that. I have a couple of thoughts on this one, actually. I had a colleague of mine that was traveling in a Middle Eastern country, went for a conference, for a business conference, was staying in a very large, very well-known hotel, had been there on trips before, you know, very professional, often westernized dress, but on this particular instance, there had been some unrest in the country that she hadn't paid attention to, wasn't aware of as she was traveling. And just in general, things were a little more tense than they otherwise would have been. And as she went to leave the hotel, the concierge actually stopped her and said, "You shouldn't go out on the streets dressed the way that you're dressed. It's going to provoke an incident," and you know, and kind of helped her out and gave her a wear local clothing, you know, match the baseline idea. And I thought that was really great. One, that somebody else was looking out for her, but two, it was a lesson in this exact concept that you need to be aware of what's happening around you and try not to make yourself a target.
I love it. And I wonder if she gave her a good tip. I would have given her some money for that. Just good travel thing. Tip your concierge. They'll take care of you. And by the way, I needed to add some of my other notes on this were match not only clothing, but the speed you move and your gestures. So even though you're dressed like the locals, you don't want to be loud and boisterous if you're in a more toned down atmosphere. And Americans can do that. And then vice versa. If it's a very fast paced scenario and you're moving it like a turtle, you're going to stand out. So it's, and even if you don't know where you're going, and I've done this in situations when I'm on the streets of New York, I may not know where I'm going, but I'm not going to stop and hold up my phone for a GPS situation on the corner. Move along, get into a cafe, sit at a table and figure out where you're at, but move the speed of the pedestrians around you. Don't stand out even with speed. Next one on this list, number five, and it's sad, but this one has to, the guys in this training said you have to do this one separately even, is no ostentatious shows of wealth. Don't, even though you may match the baseline, you don't need to wear your gaudy rings and necklaces and expensive this and that. Kevin, the trainer at On Point Tactical, used an example locally. Now, let's just go domestic here for a minute. One of the, he ranked the cities in America that are the most dangerous for carjacking and muggings. Phoenix, number one. Phoenix. And I was like, really? And he goes, what blew my mind? He goes, I was flying to Phoenix like 2 months ago. And he goes, there was this couple in first class. Guy was like 65, 70. Woman is with was probably 30. They probably lived in Scottsdale. You know the MO. Okay. Anyway, so probably a second wife of scenario. But anyway, the point was they were decked to the hilt. He goes, she probably had a 5-carat matching earrings. She probably had 10 carats between the two earrings, a big old necklace with diamond, a big old ring. He had a huge Rolex that was probably a $50,000 Rolex. And he goes, they roll off the plane, just, you know, showing off all this wealth, and they go out to get a taxi. And he's like, what are you, insane? And he was just shocked by that. And little did they know how risky Phoenix could be. Now, maybe they got, you know, 95% of the time or more, we all just go straight to the hotel and we're good. But do you want to take that risk? So he says, in the public areas, no ostentatious showing of wealth. So that was number five. Okay, I'm going to go to number six, which I think fits in this situation, is when you're in a place, and this, Christy, this would be for you when you were living in Samoa. So I'm going to throw this out. One of his major points was, is when you're traveling and you're in a place for a longer period of time, you might be in a work assignment for 3 or 4 weeks or whatever it is, avoid patterns. It says, do not leave the hotel at the same time. Do not take the same path. Do not take the same this, the same that. Because if you're being cased or watched, they will know that. And then that they, he says, most of these criminals, they want a plan. Now, they may be dumb in some ways, and they can do some dumb things, which we'll talk about, but they can also be, they don't want to not have an escape route, or they want to have a plan. So if they can catch you in a regular pattern, that's going to be important. Did you do that when you were living internationally for months on an end?
I absolutely didn't do it in Samoa because there's one road. Basically.
There was one path.
Yeah. There's a path. So I took the path and, you know, so did everybody else.
Hold it. Some white woman down the path. You probably stood out no matter what you tried to do. You're like, I can't blend.
Right.
I tanned all I could, but.
Exactly. But I have spent some time in London and I think that applies there. Particularly if you're, you know, hanging out in the tourist areas, be aware if you're going to go off path and go, you know, in some of the darker alleys or down a narrower street, and just make sure that you're not doing the same thing over and over again. I was with some executives that had an office right on, you know, in one of the main squares in England that was broken into 5, maybe 6 times, and ultimately the local authorities indicated that they were being targeted because it was very obvious that they were out of town people and that there were a lot of people with equipment and technology and stuff that were routinely coming into that office, leaving it there overnight while they went to dinner or whatever. And it was a really easy target. So, yeah.
Very interesting. Now I've got 2 or 3 that are pretty, I think, doable and easy to come to make a part of your habit suggestions here. And then we're going to take it to another level on if something bad happens, what do you do? And so Christy, be prepared with maybe 2 or 3 your items. Let's see if I grab them here. I'm kind of excited to see if what your list has evolved to as well as mine. So this is kind of back to the packing theory, but we need to talk about it and bring it back into the conversation, is an RFID wallet or purse. Now, if some of you don't know what this is a wallet or purse that has metal or electronic type protection in the thread work of the fabric so that people cannot scan your wallet and steal your credit card information. This happens domestically. I talked to someone just this last week where they were in a mall in the United States and someone had walked by, scanned their bag and stole their credit card information. But it happens much, much more internationally. And so the RFID wallet, I had one. I don't use it as much as I should when I travel because it's kind of a pain to move things over, but it's a discussion point. Next was always travel with two wallets. And I know women, I've heard too that you just forget the purse. You've got to modify your habits when you travel internationally or into big cities domestically. And we could go maybe on our next part two, we'll go through the top 10 cities in the US to be careful of. But two wallets, you have your real wallet and your fake wallet. The fake wallet still has some basic ID, so it's believable with some cash in it. And if you get mugged, you may even feign trying to not go with it and then give it up a little. Don't just hand it over. They're going to be like, why do you hand that over so easy? But try to, feign some acting there as well as you cough up your fake wallet and then have your real wallet buried in a spot that's a little harder to get to in your socks, pant legs, and not in your pockets, obviously, somewhere a little more discreet. So two wallets.
So I haven't done the RFID wallet myself. I think it's a great idea, definitely. I have done the two wallet thing though. I generally will carry most of my, my passport and or, the majority of my funds right against my skin on my body somewhere. So I'll either have it in a thigh, strapped on or around my neck under my blouse. And that'll be sort of because if it's against your skin, at least this was the theory, you're more likely to feel it if somebody tries to take it away from you. And then keep only the minimal amount of what you're going to need for when you're out to pay for dinner or whatever. So you're not flashing a bunch of money around when you go to get money out of your purse. So
I love it. Absolutely. And on that note of wallets is passport. These experts had cautioned two things. Always keep your passport on you. Do not leave it in the hotel. Do not leave it anywhere. Keep it in your underwear if you have to, but keep your passport with you at all times. And he said, which is quite common, I understand. He said, we as Americans, he goes, I always have mine in a Canadian cover. No one hates Canadians, apparently. They're really nice people. They love them. So Canadians are kind of this great way that you can easily be mistaken physically and as well with your language and accent for a Canadian. And he says, I always have my passport in a Canadian cover. And it's just smart because you're flashing this out. Again, maybe when you're checking onto a train, a plane, at the hotel, people are watching. You don't know who's up, three levels in a hotel off a balcony with a little binoculars looking down at what you're doing. And you're being cased. And he goes, this is very, very common. He talked about how there's always a spotter that is moving on the streets, communicating with those that actually perpetrate the crime. This goes to the movie Taken. So in the movie Taken, which Liam Neeson is a freaking stud, he said that a lot of tradecraft there. He said that was very, very typical of a human trafficking situation. That it's just so terrible. And I just want to mention on that human trafficking topic, if some of you haven't looked at The Underground Railroad with Ken Ballard, Ken Ballard has done some documentaries. He's also out saving people every day, every week, ex-CIA, and he raises money. He comes through a lot of the Western states with fundraisers, raising money to save girls and children that are being kidnapped around the world. The numbers are off the chart. It is absolutely sickening. But if you want to Google that, check out Ken Ballard and The Underground Railroad. Okay, again, another little side note. But passports, keep it always with you. think that's very smart. Okay, yeah, now what's on?
Along those lines, Mark, a lot of people these days have two passports. And I, you know, am familiar with people who routinely have two passports. They may have it for lots of different reasons, but they selectively choose which passport to use when they enter a country based on political tensions, perhaps treaties. You know, so you may use your U.S. passport when you're going into one location and your Spanish passport when you're going into another location. Perfectly legitimate, and there are good reasons to do that.
Yeah, and there's, you can go to websites that say I want another passport, not for, again, fraudulent purposes, and they can cost, and there's a procedure. It might include a trip to the Caribbean for fun, but they're available. And also think about aliases. Aliases are allowed and legitimate. Do you think Cameron Diaz, when she goes stays at the Hilton in New York, checks into the hotel under Cameron Diaz? They don't. Many, many A-list and B-list actors have an alias for their traveling. And that's okay. We're not hiding from the IRS. I'm not committing a fraud. I'm not lying to TSA, but I have a legitimate way to build an alias. Now, this is in J.J. Luna's book, prior guest on our show. And we love J.J. Luna. You can Google him, J.J. Luna, and his books, blog, and writings on how to build an alias too, so that if you want a little more privacy. Okay, now before I get into some more high tech here in our last few that are a little more, okay, now danger has occurred. I've been targeted, I've been spotted, and they're going to make a move on me. What are some things that I should know to prepare for that? And so I was gonna go down that path. Is there something else a little more simpler for those that just to stay out of that harm's way that you had on your list? Did I hit him?
Yeah, the you hit most of them. I guess sort of the story that comes to mind is when we were doing business in Africa at night after dark in this one particular city, it was sort of local custom or known that you didn't stop the vehicle after dark. So regardless if there's a stop sign, stop light, whatever, you rolled through cautiously, but you didn't stop the vehicle because that increased your chance of carjacking exponentially. So sort of that same be in the present, match the baseline. You know, if everybody around you is doing a particular thing, I would follow suit. You know, that just tends to be, there's generally a reason why a whole group of people are doing the exact same thing. So otherwise, yeah, I think you're on track.
Okay. All right. So
very Liam Neeson-esque.
I like it. I hope I sometimes, you know, I can't eat all the local food, but I'll do my best. You might find me jump into a McDonald's to escape the local cuisine once in a while. Okay. I'm going to throw out, as we start to escalate this, some important points. One thing that these experts recommend, because you may be in a kidnap situation, you may be in an emergency or a national disaster or a civil unrest scenario. So you've got your go bag, blowout bag, bailout bag. There's actually different terms for these different types of bags, which you can start to kind of get into. But one is that's a simple tool that they just recommend over and over again is having a Leatherman on you. For those that are not kind of rustic, outdoorsy, Cabela, Bass Pro Shop shoppers, a Leatherman are these multi-tools that could be any range from $20 to $100 at most. They're very, very handy. Now, this brings into the topic of checked luggage, because when you start traveling internationally, there's a good chance you're going to check luggage anyway, and it's okay to put a knife or a Leatherman in your checked luggage. So you want to make sure you read up on travel rules to going to that country. I shouldn't say that. Generally, it's okay, especially domestically. But if you are going to be traveling to Jamaica, you want to know, what can I put in my checked luggage? What's allowed? What's not? If I'm on the street with larger than a 3-inch blade, what's going to happen? And we're going to come to weapons here in a moment. But the Leatherman is kind of a all-around tool that's generally accepted worldwide that you could put in your checked baggage. Then you keep the Leatherman on you at all times. It's going to have multi-tools for a variety of situations. And this is why a little bit of online training and videos when it comes to urban and wilderness survival can be very important. Who knows what you're going to encounter Hotel Rwanda, you know, on a vacation. So, Christy, thoughts on her Leatherman? Do you own a Leatherman?
I have lost numerous Leathermen to the TSA.
Yes.
So, yeah, make sure you move them to your checked baggage is my thought on the Leatherman, because it's not necessarily I was even emergency planning. I just happened to carry one normally and forget to remove it. And yeah, the TSA has enjoyed numerous Leathermans on my behalf.
Yes. Well, I know, pocket knives, all that. Next is, which is taking this to another level, no pun intended, is a lot of these special ops type folks will never stay on a floor higher than the fifth floor. That may seem interesting after seeing Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise at some of the highest hotels in the world, you know, jumping off and parachuting and all that. But more realistically, that was not tradecraft, and the guys were keen to point that out. But you want to stay on lower levels of hotels. Several reasons, they said. One is most fire, or if there is an emergency or natural disaster, you're any higher than the fifth floor is very, very hard to be rescued. Most equipment cannot get past the fifth floor with ladders and these sorts of things. And you may say, well, if it's a tsunami, I definitely don't want to be on the first floor. And that's fair point. If you're on an island, you may want to be two or three floors up, especially if you're close to the water. But you don't want to be higher than the fifth floor. There's also what's known as a bailout bag, which for those that are climbers, and I've got several friends that are big into climbing, that this bailout bag is actually fairly affordable, tight-spaced bag that has 90 feet of Kevlar, the 6.5 millimeter, a belt and harness, and they can rappel off of anything in very short notice. That's called a bailout bag. Now, again, we're taking it to another level here, but who knows where you're traveling for work or pleasure, but being careful to stay in high floors of hotels. So any thoughts, Christy, on that? The view is nice, I'm sure, at some of these hotels, but got to be real, right? Okay.
Yeah, nothing to add on that one.
Okay. That was number 11. Now I'm going to jump over to number 12, and that is noise and run. Kind of this first 15 seconds of any mugging, kidnapping situation. It was very insightful that they said the longer you're with the perpetrators, the harder it is to escape. And I'll say it another way. As time passes, it gets harder and harder to escape, because they're going to take you from an immediate location on the street to somewhere to transport, and then somewhere even more secure. And as you get moved, those locations get more and more secure and difficult to get away. And usually the restraints get more and more difficult to escape out of. So what they said is the first thing is, when it happens and you know you're in that situation and it's not looking good, two cars pull up alongside, one behind, which is very common, they pull out your door, grab you, you scream, you kick, you fight. And if you're going to shoot me now, you know, sort of thing. And that may sound very dramatic, but it's not going to get better. And so he said, be real about what you're facing. Don't go cooperatively, like, oh, don't shoot me, I'll go with you, let me get in your trunk. It's like, no. You kick, you fight, you scream, and hopefully there might be a public situation that distracts them enough to say, all right, this guy's loony, this woman's crazy, we don't need this, there's too many people looking. Do not make it easy for them to put you in the back seat or the trunk of a car. That first 15 seconds. The story that is ironic that they used too was Jeffrey Dahmer. If you remember when he was in Utah. Now, this Jeffrey Dahmer was the Utah one. There's so many different serial killers. Now, one of the ones these guys used as a good example in the training was Ted Bundy. And if some of you have watched the documentary on this, the movie, it is fascinating how this guy was back in the 70s able to elude and escape from multiple situations as a serial killer. But the one of the things that led to his ultimate capture was he was in a parking lot in in South Salt Lake, Utah. And he was feigned as a law student in University of Utah and never graduated, but he was in Utah grabbing girls and killing them. And there was a girl that he tried to abduct in a parking lot, and her, I think it was her father or a close family member was military, or I mean, in the police force. Maybe it was her uncle. And she had been told, you never go with them willingly. And she kicked and fought and scratched him and fought and fought, and he gave up. Said, this is not worth it. And I got to get out of here. Because all the other girls that he would grab, he was able to subdue quickly and they'd go willingly. And because of her identification of him, it led to an ultimate manhunt. And many say that that was the one lead that really started to unravel the case and the search. But anyway, that was a great example of just fight. And if they're going to beat you or shoot you, it's sad to say that maybe that could be the best time to make your potential escape. So you're not even in this situation to begin with. Okay. Anything you want to add to that, Christy?
Nope. Same thing. I did a self-defense class and they basically taught us the exact same thing. Yeah. Where if you're in a car, honk the horn. Don't follow the rules, I think, is another good one that goes along with that. You know, if somebody pulls up alongside you or traps the car, don't worry about driving on the road. At that point, drive on the sidewalk. You know, do what you can to get out of the situation and draw attention. Because when you start doing something that's out of the norm, people are going to notice.
I love that comment. That was really cool. And gosh, that is great. And I like that. Don't follow the norm. Don't cooperate and fight them off. Now, self-defense, that was a side note here. I may even make that our next item, is that they all recommended to all the guys in the room. And this particular training I was in, it was just some guys. There was only five or six of us. They said, take a boxing class, take a Krav Maga class. You should know some basic moves. Now you may get into it and train more and really use it as a weight loss technique and getting fit. But they said, if you don't know some basic moves or know how to take a punch, one of the guys was very clear about that. Just so you can take a boxing class to know what it feels like to get punched. That's not a bad, it sounds weird, but he's like, if you don't get punched a lot or have ever been really hit hard in the face and that happens, you lose sense of what's going on. But if you've been in a boxing scenario, you can go, okay, I can deal with this. And no, not Jason Bourne deal with it, but seriously. So did you really enjoy your training?
Yeah, I loved it. Same concepts. Their idea was, you know some basic ways to get out of a hold the way most people are grabbed. The one that I thought was the most interesting and unexpected was, at least in this course, they taught us to grab the gun. Of if somebody points a gun at you, grab it. The concept being that, yeah, you may get shot, but you're more likely to get shot in the shoulder or somewhere where it's not vital. And it opens the door for you to get away because they're not expecting you to grab the gun. And the odds are if you're grabbing it, they're not going to hit where they intended to anyway. So,
Wow. I like it. Can you grab the gun and disassemble it with one hand and drop the clip to the ground in one of those fashions?
I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Very good. I love it. All right. Okay. We're wrapping it up on this loose ends of some higher level stuff. Experts say have access to paracord. Paracord, that's parachute cord. And there's different micro, mini levels of standard size parachute cord. They said when we travel, we replace our shoelaces with the appropriate paracord. You should have 6 foot of paracord. Now, the reason why here is, let's assume you're potentially kidnapped. Now you're in the back of a trunk and maybe you're in a room, and we're going to come to restraints here in a moment. But they said having a paracord handy is almost like having gray tape handy when you're camping. It's just like one of those things that you can use in multiple ways. So that you could buy a book or take a course on how to use paracord in probably 100 ways. You sometimes see those paracord wrist bands that are, you know, 9 feet of woven, and you pull one thing and they all come out. They can be in your shoelaces, they can be on your ankle, but access to paracord. Next was picking tools, learning how to pick a lock. Now, in this course that I took, we were all handcuffed. First, we were trained for about 30 minutes or so on how to pick a handcuff. And we have pictures of this. The 90% of all handcuffs are two different versions, the Peerless and the Smith & Wesson, I'm looking at pictures of them right now. And the easiest way to pick the lock and to also escape and release the handcuffs. And I was surprised at they go with practice. It's not that hard if you know what you're doing and you have the right pick tools. There's little things you can put on your waist, barrettes and little types of thing for hair clips that can be disguised in your belts. So if you're into this, you will, when you put on your belt or even in your sock or in your shoe, you'll have some of these little tools that can easily pick the lock of handcuffs. And there's stories of people being kidnapped. No, they're a little more rare because they don't always get talked about either, but they shared several that were legit and documented of people that were thrown into the trunk of a car with handcuffs. And within 5 minutes, they had the picking tool to do it. They had been trained. They were military or had some military training. And they were thrown in a trunk. They escaped, got out of the trunk, and ran away when the car stopped at a stoplight. And they had prevented something terribly. Because again, the longer you're with these assailants, the worse it gets. So there's YouTube videos. There's classes on how to get out of handcuffs. I was handcuffed in my class, and I had to get out. And they didn't put my hands together. I just had one. And it took me about 10 minutes, but I was able to pick the lock and get out of it. Now, one last movie reference, maybe for this example, would be U.S. Marshals, where Robert Downey Jr. grabs the glasses off of the U.S. Marshal assistant, Tommy Lee Jones guy. I can't remember his name at the time, right now. But he grabbed his glasses, broke off these metal glasses, the piece, and within 10 seconds had broken out of the handcuffs. Now that was a little, it's doable. And with enough practice, that could happen. And so he said, if you have the right type of glasses and you have the space and they're in front of you, you could do that. That was realistic, but it was very few people can do it that fast. You have to be very trained, which he should have been in the situation he was at. But anyway, so that picking the locks, so having pick tools, access to paracord, and, I'm going to throw out this one last one, which may be, maybe there's two here, is this is especially domestically as well. When you get off the plane or wherever you're going, arm yourself to the level that's legally allowed. Now that's where you'll see again in movies that people get off the plane, they go to the drop box or someone hands them an envelope or they immediately get the weapon that is allowed, or maybe it's covert and it's not allowed. But the point is, you want to know, where am I going? So now in the U.S., an example would be if I have a concealed permit weapon, a concealed permit to carry a gun in 39 states, am I traveling to a state that allows that? Well, check your gun in the bag. And there's a special lock case and a TSA procedure for this. When you get off the plane, you get your bag. You can put your sidearm on you if you're a gun-toting person. That goes for knives, whether it's a sheathed knife or a folding knife, and also pepper spray and those sorts of things, mace. Arm yourself to the level that's allowed legally where you won't get into trouble, and that's internationally and domestically. And so a lot of people talk about that too. So, Christy, anything on those two or three items? I know those are a little higher level crazy if you're in a situation.
Those ones are beyond me. I have not tried arming myself, but I'm taking notes, and you may see me armed in the office tomorrow. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we do have a company policy about that. So we'll think twice. I will throw out this too. We had to learn how to get out of gray tape and also zip ties. And with paracord, I was able to get out of my zip ties. So within about 10 minutes with paracord in my shoelaces, if I would have been left in a room, I would have been able to get out of my zip ties. And there's ways to get out of zip ties quickly that were amazing. My partner, Liddell Air, got out of zip ties in less than 60 seconds and around his wrist. He had ice on his wrist for the rest of the day, but it was still pretty cool how he got out. Now, if there's someone's holding a sword and there's a video camera going and you're going to get your head cut off and you're in zip ties, you're going to take out as many people as you can before, but you know. Who knows what your situation could be. So learn some of those techniques too. And then finally, as you run whenever, this is where you do enough self-defense training to at least escape being held or in that immediate spot, but don't try to take out four people or three people and finish them off. This isn't time to be Jackie Chan. This is time to just get free enough that you can run. And there's stories too of people, most assailants are these people, they don't want to chase you. And so being in shape was one of their tips. If you're not in shape and you're traveling, think twice. You know, who knows what could happen with, again, a natural disaster or some sort of civil unrest. Okay, there we go. Christy, I'm going to leave you with this. I thought this was really fascinating. I love this topic. It was fun for me to at least talk about this with you, especially. I'm going to let you summarize and then we'll start wrapping this up.
Yeah. So know where you're going, know what the situation is that you're getting into, be aware of yourself, plan ahead. You know, even if it's a spontaneous trip, look at the travel advisories. Those are awesome sources of information. Do some of these little things that you can to help protect yourself. And then I guess my favorite one is have an exit strategy or a place to go. While I was in Samoa, I actually got to live through a hurricane down there. Was in a home that was severely damaged in the hurricane, was flooding. People didn't have access to us. There was very limited communication. Where do you go? What's your first port of call if you have a situation? So I like that. Be prepared.
Gosh, I'm gonna put that in the list. I like it. Know your escape route again and emergency support resources. Again, if you're traveling for an extensive period. And resources. I love that. Well, Christy Parker, now we're going to have a part two, people, in the next few weeks. We're going to have Christy back to talk about, now that I'm there and I'm safe and I want to buy a property there and exploit this little rental property and make crazy cash flow. Or I, you know, maybe it's a wonderfully safe place where you're at, buying a little rental property on the shores of Tahiti, and it's a little Airbnb with no regulations and you're killing it. I don't know, but we're going to be back for part two of international investing. Now you're safe and sound, we hope, and some interesting stuff. I've got a to-do list of things. I talked to my wife about a self-defense class together. Rather than going to Arthur Murray for some dance lessons, we are going to do some Krav Maga so that she can break my wrist if I move too quickly in the kitchen and surprise her. So we're going to have a good time on this personally as well in our office and in our relationships. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Christy, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. It's been fun.
We'll have you back. Maybe Matt Sorensen will join us on the next one. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week for the Open Forum.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.